Morning.
I mentioned a little bit over the couple of days, a little bit about the geology or geography of this region, this area right here, this valley. And we're in a plateau that was left by the glaciers, and it's between two river systems. Going south is Hutchinson Creek, which runs into the South Fork of the Nooksack. And then, as I said last night, that V is where the Middle Fork of the Nooksack comes down. And so we're on this plateau, and there's a whole series of lakes on this plateau. The one you saw yesterday was Lake Jorgensen, and the next one to the north is Mosquito Lake, which is a very beautiful little lake. And then there's a whole series of other ones, and we have this really nice trail that goes, we call it the Circle of the Lakes. And yesterday, Vanna suggested that we hike it. And so I was just talking it over with Sister Jewel in terms of, you know, like how that might fit well into our schedule. And so we were thinking tomorrow during walking meditation time, we would do that circle, and there's a dock on Mosquito Lake where we can stop and have tea together. So I don't know how many people have backpacks, because we'll need to take teacups and tea. Is there anybody who would volunteer to kind of work with me to pull together teacups and the backpack? Great. Super. Okay, we'll be able to do it for sure then. Great.
Maybe just also to say it would be an hour and a half, so an hour walking at a pretty brisk pace there and back. I mean, all total 1 hour, and then half an hour for tea, so just to make sure that's okay for people to walk that long.
And we're also assuming the weather's going to continue, which it, theoretically it's supposed to continue like this. So. So checking in with our cook also that we might be a little bit late tomorrow. Is that okay? Great. And we'll try to start a little bit earlier. So have boots probably, or tennis shoes. I'll probably just walk in tennis shoes. It's not terribly rough. Yeah, it's a pretty good trail. So maybe we can have three bells just to bring ourselves back from Mosquito Lake. To teach a song. I think some of you probably know this song already. It was written by Sister Annabelle in the 80s, I believe. And it was inspired by a talk that Tai gave about taking refuge in the island of self. And it goes like this. Breathing in, I come back to the island within myself. I'll just try that. Breathing in, I go back to the island within myself. There are beautiful birds within the island. There are beautiful birds within the island. There are clear streams of water. There are clear streams of water. There are
beautiful trees within the island.
I have to go all the way through it. It's a little hard for me to break it out. So the next line is, there are beautiful trees within the island. There are clear streams of water. There are birds, sunshine, and fresh air. Breathing out, I feel safe. I enjoy going back to my island. That sounds like most people know. Maybe we can just all sing it through together again. I'm going to raise the tone a little bit. Breathing in, I go back to the island within myself. There are beautiful trees within the island. There are clear streams of water. There are birds, sunshine, and fresh air. Breathing out, I feel safe. I enjoy going back to my island. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about the perennial. It is here that is our only true refuge. And the perennial speaks in the ancient winds that are still blowing, and in the ceaseless tides that are ebbing and flowing. It speaks in the rising sun, and in the waning moon, and in the calling of the geese. It is our own heart's deepest longing. I remember my own first clear expression of that heart song. And the words were a deep desire for peace of mind. I knew that if I didn't learn to touch this, that I was forever condemned to living in exile. Exile from myself, exile from the world, exile from other people, and most importantly, exile from my true self. I remember the first time I heard Thay talk was in 1982 at San Francisco Zen Center. And I had never heard of Thay before, and it was happenstance that I happened to be there right then to that I'd heard this monk was coming and going to give a speech, and I thought, okay, I'll go, I'll be there for it. And I remember, I don't remember a lot of what he said, but I remember being in tears through the whole talk. I know many of us have had that experience. And the words that reverberated for me that so are still with me from that talk is that man is not the enemy. Humans are not the enemy. And knowing what he had gone through, what the Vietnamese people had gone through, to be able to speak those words, I knew was someone who had touched their true self and was speaking with that voice. There's a, you know, a famous speech that was given by Chief Seattle, and that's not pronounced right, Seattle. That's not how his name was really pronounced, but it was the best the white people could do. And it is an honoring, I think, of the man that the city is named after him. He was the chief of the Squamish. And this was his response to the president, telling him that the tribal peoples of the region would need to go onto a reservation. There's a one sort of really poignant environmental speech that's attributed to him that actually really wasn't given by him, apparently, but this is the real response. It matters little where we pass the remnant of our days. They will not be many. The Indian's night promises to be dark. Not a single star of hope hovers above his horizon. Sad-voiced winds moan in the distance. Grim fate seems to be on the red man's trail, and wherever he will hear the approaching footsteps of his fellow destroyer, and prepare stolidly to meet his doom, as does the wounded doe that hears the approaching footsteps of the hunter. A few more moons, a few more winters, and not one of the descendants of the mighty hosts that once moved over this broad land or lived in happy homes protected by the Great Spirit will remain to mourn over the graves of a people once more powerful and hopeful than yours. But why should I mourn at the untimely fate of my people? Tribe follows tribe, and nation follows nation like the waves of the sea. It is the order of nature, and the regret is useful, and regret is useless. Your time of decay may be distant, but it will surely come for even the white man whose God walked and talked with him as friend to friend cannot be exempt from the common destiny. We may be brothers after all. We will see. We will ponder your proposition, and when we decide, we will let you know. But should we accept it, I here and now make this condition that we will not be denied the privilege without molestation of visiting any time the tombs of our ancestors, friends, and children. Every part of this soil is sacred in the estimation of my people. Every hillside, every valley, every plain and grove has been hallowed by some sad or happy event in the days long vanished. Even the rocks, which seem to be dumb and dead as the swelter in the sun, the very dust upon which you now stand, responds more lovingly to their footsteps than yours. Because it is rich with the blood of our ancestors, and our bare feet are conscious of the sympathetic touch. Our departed braves, fond mothers, glad, happy-hearted maidens, and even the little children who lived here and rejoiced for a brief season will love those somber solitudes, and at eventide they greet shadowy returning spirits. And when the last red men shall have perished and the memory of my tribe shall have become a myth among the white men, these shores will swarm with the invisible dead of my tribe. And when your children's children think themselves alone in the field, the store, the shop, upon the highway, or in the silence of the pathless woods, they will not be alone. In all the earth, there is no place dedicated to solitude. At night, when the streets of your cities and villages are silent, and you think them deserted, they will throng with the returning hosts that once filled them and still love this beautiful land. The white man will never be alone. Let him be just and deal kindly with my people, for the dead are not powerless. Dead, did I say? There is no death, only a change of worlds. So it is time in this world for a new beginning. It is time for people to stop being against people, and cities against cities, and countries against countries. Will it ever stop? I don't know. So does what we're doing here matter? Yes, I believe it does. This is where the new beginning happens. It happens in our hearts and in our minds. In the Buddha, in the Four Noble Truths, spoke about suffering. And in the First Noble Truth, he said there is suffering. And there's no one in this room that is a stranger to that and cannot attest to the truth of that statement, that there is suffering. But the Buddha was incredibly optimistic, as I am too. As anyone who practices this path deeply will be. He said that there's a way to understand the suffering and such a way that we could end it. And in the cessation of suffering, we become free. And the very practice that we are doing here together is the practice, is the path that he outlined for the ending of suffering. It is important that we speak the truth right where we are. But there's something interesting in acknowledging the real suffering in our hearts, in our society, amongst us as human beings, in the vast environment, natural world that supports us. We can't truly touch that pain if we are in exile. Then the pain is only poison. It's a bitterness. It's an anger that arises from that poison. And the suffering, though it may be caused by external events, it's inside of us. And that's where we have to greet it. We have to acknowledge it. We have to start right where we are. And we're doing that together. And I honor that. But if we are touching the suffering in exile, then the suffering will overwhelm us. Our dwelling place, has to be in refuge. We have to know our place of refuge in order to be able to truly face the pain and the suffering. I spent some time last night after our ceremony and a little time this morning after sitting with the altar. Very beautiful. And one of the things I looked at and was very moved by was this card that Jenny brought last night in loving memory of Alessio Renan de Ting. And the words on the back of it were his expression, I believe, of refuge. The Lord, Shepherd and Host. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. In verdant pastures he gives me repose. Beside restful waters he leads me. He refreshes my soul. He guides me in the right paths for my name's sake, for his name's sake. Even though I walk in the dark valley, I fear no evil. You are at my side. Your rod and your staff protect me, give me courage. You spread the table before me in the sight of my foes. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Only goodness and kindness follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know, the truth is we dwell in the house of the Lord right now. Sometimes we call it Buddha mind. And it is our place of refuge. And it's not too distant. We don't have to look too far. When we step outside, and we look across at the mountains, we know the mountains are our very own nature. They are our strength. But really, you know, we see them like they're across the valley, but where do we see them? We see them inside ourselves. And when we really acknowledge the mountains, they are us. We hear the song of the spring song of the red-winged blackbird. We think it's out there in the cattails on the lake. But really where we hear the bird is inside of ourselves. And in acknowledging the call of the bird, we acknowledge the bird as ourself. In the words that were spoken this morning during the five touchings of the earth, they weren't words about the past. They weren't words about others. They were words that were echoing in the chambers of our own hearts and were our own words. Alive right now. And the healing power our own words is where the healing happens. The Buddha's offering to us is every moment is a place of refuge. Should we turn our mind to it and accept it as our own body, our own breath, our own being. And when we take a step on the earth is not other than who we are already. When we take a breath, We're breathing the breath of trees and grasses, shrubs, all the green things. And in breathing the breath of trees, we're accepting the sun as our very nature. The trees and the grasses, the green things, are the only things on earth that are able to take the energy of the sun and make it available to us. It's the only reason we can be alive, because we can't take the energy of the sun and turn it into our bodies. But the trees and the grasses, all the green things are doing that all the time for us. They are our bodies, and so is the sun. And so when we walk, we know that something in the universe loves us very deeply. And it is that we call God or Buddha mind. And it is our true home, our place of refuge, and it's always available. Tai came up with a felicitous term, interbeing. But if we take it as an idea or a concept and we use somebody else's words, then it's not the living body of ourselves. Because truly, we only can know this deep place of refuge, this true nature of who we are inside our own hearts as our own experience. It can't be somebody else's experience. It's only our own experience. And so our practice is very much turning our mind to being here, to taking refuge. This breath, this unfolding body that is no other than the body of trees and grasses and sunshine and the earth. Ever flowing, it is part of who we are. And it is the manifestation of the great love of the universe that each and every one of us is here. And when we touch that, we begin to touch our true home, our place of refuge. And it is a practice, because we forget. Moment by moment we forget. Moment by moment we come back to remember. And this weekend very much is about remembering. It's about acknowledging the pain. Not pretending it didn't happen. It's not there. Not trying to cover it over or avoid it. But not getting lost in it. Remembering what our true home is. And so the pain can't be transformed unless we know how to take refuge. Yeah, of course we really never know what's happening. What's going to happen. and there's another side that comes along with not knowing. And that is a side of trust. Not knowing and trust are the same thing. So, you know, starting from this moment, knowing the pain of the past, it's really easy to project that pain into the future. But really part of taking refuge is being willing to not know. And in that not knowing, trust what's here. Trust what's given. That it is exactly the same as acknowledging the pain. And there's a mystery here. And it's a mystery that our conceptual mind cannot reconcile, cannot comprehend. But through our practice, through our deep experience of refuge, we can come to understand that how even the suffering is the Buddha mind. And when we can touch that, then we can begin to trust it a bit. If we can't accept things just as we are, accept ourselves just as we are, accept the situation just as it is, then change isn't possible. And that's part of what we're doing in acknowledging what has happened on this earth to all peoples. Nation against nation, race against race, men against women. It is only by accepting and acknowledging that change becomes possible. But in the accepting and the acknowledging, we also say, I trust this. I trust that I won't be totally overwhelmed by this. I won't be blown away by this. And the only way we can do that is by knowing our true refuge. I think how we touch and experience refuge will be unique experience for each of us. But the incredible strength that comes from touching refuge means that when there is suffering, we can really truly take the bodhisattva vow, which is, I won't turn away. I will be here. And the only way we can do that is by taking refuge. There's something that we're doing in the world. There's something that is happening in the world, you know, that where that, you know, we are scaring ourselves with death. And maybe it's just we're projecting our fear of death onto the world. I mean, certainly we project our fear of death onto each other. I mean, I think that's how this whole mess of people against people happens, is that I've got mine and I got to protect it. And if you don't think the way I think, there's something wrong with you. And all that fear And when we really can see truly, the fear of death leaves us. And we see there's no one here to protect. I truly believe that this is how deep our practice needs to be in order for us to change what's happening in the world. That we need to see, as Cheap Seattle said, that there is no death. And not as an idea or a concept, but as an actual experience of what is the true reality, the true nature. A story I read some time ago that I really love a lot, and it's a story of a rabbi and his congregation. And he looked at his congregation one day and asked them a question, and he said, "How can you tell when light has ended and the sun has begin to?" To shine. Sort of like asking, what did the Buddha see when he looked up from his meditation and saw the morning star arising in the east? What did he really see that was the end of suffering for him? That was so important that he stood up and walked forth and went to find his friends who had dismissed him and didn't want anything to do with him, to teach them. What gave him that strength? It's really important that we ask ourselves that as practitioners of students of Thai. Practitioners of the way, as members of a Sangha. What is it he saw that ended his fear? What is it that Chief Seattle knew? So the rabbi asked his congregation this, and there was silence in the room for a little bit, and then someone stood up and said, I think it's when you can, one tree stands out from the whole forest. And the rabbi said, that's a really good answer. Let's keep looking. Let's look for another answer. And so the people sat and thought for a while longer. And another person stood up and said, I think it's when you can tell that the mist has dissipated and it really was just a cloud. And he said, also, that's a very good answer. But is there another answer? And finally, someone said, we don't know, why don't you tell us? Please tell us. And he said, it's when you look into a stranger's face and you see your own. This is a realization, and it is also a practice. And it really is the practice that we take on together. Is the practice we're doing here together this weekend. And that is a place of refuge. It is our true home. And we do our best to bring forth that mindfulness of that true home in our activities, in our interactions. And we have protection in our tradition that helps us to bring that mind forth. And we'll be talking about them and looking at it today. It's expressed in the five mindfulness trainings. They arise from that mind. That mind of fearlessness is the mind of compassion. It is no other than the mind of wisdom. And the five mindfulness trainings are the living embodiment and expression of that mind. It's not rules. It's not how we should be. They're something to practice. They express the formless, the eternal. They are the body of compassion. And which we, you know, compassion has no form unless we give our bodies to it. And then compassion takes form. And that's not completely accurate, because the trees are compassionate. The rivers are compassionate. The great earth is compassionate. You know, the rivers nourish and protect the fish, the stones. They collect the waters of the mountains and the clouds. They are always there flowing through us. And that compassionate nature is always flowing everywhere, all the time. And it's that we've forgotten that our true nature, our body already is compassion. And it's the remembering of that that gives life to the five mindfulness trainings. And perhaps this can be the deepest kind of refuge that we can find. On our altar we have a statue of Avalokiteshvara. She's the goddess of compassion. And she's kind of fierce. If you look at her, she's got one eye that's pretty fierce. But, you know, when we can't touch that compassion in our own hearts, the wisdom of the compassion in our own hearts, we have the five mindfulness trainings. We have a reminder who we bow to several times a day, not as something on the altar, but as our true nature, our absolute nature. The nature that is beyond birth and death, beyond coming and going, beyond you and me, beyond arising and falling away. And we can only know that nature in this moment. We can only know it when we touch the earth with our feet and our complete presence. and body and mind fall away. All our ideas fall away. And in that, an experience of knowing happens, that the earth is our body, the trees are our breath, the rivers are the blood in our veins. So practicing this here this weekend while we're together is really wonderful, because when we go back to our daily lives, it's easy to forget. There's so many demands on us. We get caught in our thinking about the future. We get caught in our projects. And all we really need to remember is it only takes one moment. And that really it only lives in this moment. We only live in this moment, because we're not separate from it. We're not separate from anything.